We're going to talk about the ganglion cysts of the hand and wrist chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook, www.orthopedia.com.
That's right. Edited by Bernstein, Penny, and Veit. An amazing resource.
Absolutely. But remember, before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely just on us. Read the book.
Definitely read the book. You'll be glad you did.
So let's dive into these ganglion cysts of the hand and wrist. Starting basically, what are we actually talking about here?
Well, you can think of them as generally harmless little fluid pockets. They tend to show up near the joints in your wrists and fingers.
Okay. Fluid pockets.
Yeah, they're soft tissue masses filled with this sort of thick fluid, and they essentially grow out of the tissues that surround a joint or maybe a tendon sheath.
Right. And we're focusing on the key stuff from this Orthopedia chapter today, so for all the finer detail.
The book is definitely your best bet.
Okay, so a fluid pocket, and where do these usually pop up? Is there a most common spot?
Oh, absolutely. The most common location, as our source points out, is the back of the wrist, what we call the dorsum.
The top side.
Exactly. That accounts for, well, over 3/4 of cases, believe it or not.
Wow.
And they typically seem to come from an area called the scapholuna joint.
Yeah.
Figure 1 in the chapter actually shows this pretty clearly.
Got it. Back of the wrist, scapholuna joint. Now, you mentioned types. Are there specific kinds of these hand ganglion cysts, ones with their own names?
Yes, there are a couple worth knowing, just for completeness, you know, because they have slightly different features.
Okay.
So there are mucous cysts, sometimes called mucinous cysts. Figure 2 shows 1. These appear on the back of the last joint of your fingers.
The ones near the fingertip.
That's right, the dorsal IP joints. The key thing with these, and we'll touch on this again later, is that they're often associated with underlying arthritis and those like bony bumps called osteophytes.
Ah, bone spurs.
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes these mucuses can even cause problems with the skin over them or make the nail look deformed.
Interesting. Any others?
Well, there are also retinacular cysts. These are just ganglion cysts that form specifically on the flexor tendon sheath, you know, on the palm side of the hand.
Okay, so location matters. Now, the big question, maybe the million-dollar question. How do these things actually form? What's the current thinking on that?
Yeah, it's not perfectly understood, but the main theory, according to the chapter, is that it involves a kind of bulging out, a herniation.
A herniation, like a hernia.
Sort of, yeah. A herniation of a weakened part of the joint capsule or that sheath around the tendon.
And what weakens it?
Well, it could be related to repeated mechanical stress, you know, weakening the capsule over time. There's also this idea of myxoid degeneration happening in the tissues right around the joint.
Myxoid degeneration.
Yeah, it's a process that seems to stimulate cells called fibroblasts to produce more of that hyaluronic acid, the stuff in the fluid. It gets a bit technical at the cellular level, but that's the gist. Orthopedia goes into more depth there.
Right, so a weak spot bulges out, fills with fluid. Makes sense. If we could, like, look inside one, what's the structure?
They're basically thin-walled sacs. The wall is made of collagen, which is, you know, a common structural protein.
Uh-huh.
And they usually have a connection, like a little stalk or pedicle, that goes back to the joint or sheath they came from.
Ah, so they're attached.
Typically, yes.
Yeah.
And an interesting point, they don't actually have the same kind of inner lining, the synovial lining, that you find in a true joint space.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, they aren't synovial cysts.
Okay, that's a key distinction. What about the fluid itself?
The fluid inside is a bit different, too. It's usually thicker, more gel-like than normal synovial fluid, and it has higher concentrations of things like hyaluronic acid, glucosamine, albumin.
So it's not just standard joint fluid that leaked out?
Not exactly. And sometimes, under a microscope, you might see some signs of mild chronic inflammation in the wall of the cyst.
Okay, got it. So how would someone know they have one? What does it look like, feel like? How does it present?
Usually, it shows up as a noticeable lump, often kind of oval-shaped.
Right.
It can feel pretty firm or sometimes a bit softer, and the size can change.
Which how?
It can fluctuate. Sometimes, though, they can be occult.
Occult, meaning hidden.
Exactly. You can't see it or feel it, and it only shows up if you get imaging done, like an MRI.
Huh. So you could have one and not even know it.
Absolutely. If it's one of the back of the wrist, the dorsal kind, a patient might feel a sort of dull ache or tenderness right over that scapholunate ligament area, and sometimes pain when they bend their wrist way back into hyperextension.
especially the small hidden ones.
Yeah, particularly with those small occult cysts, pain with hyperextension can be a clue.
And size, you said it varies.
It does. The average is maybe around 2 centimeters, but they can be smaller or much larger. And like I said, the size can go up and down, sometimes related to how active you are.
More activity, bigger cyst.
Sometimes, yeah. Or it might seem more prominent after activity, but importantly, most of them are actually asymptomatic. They don't cause any problems.
Really, no symptoms at all.
Often, yes. But if the cyst happens to press on a nearby nerve, then you might get symptoms like tingling or numbness or even some muscle weakness.
Okay. What about those retinacular cysts you mentioned?
Right, the ones on the tendon sheath. Pain can be more of a feature with those, especially when gripping things tightly.
Makes sense. You're stressing that area. So someone comes in with a lump. What kind of tests get done? Is it usually obvious?
Often the diagnosis is pretty clear just from the location and how it feels, but objective testing can be useful.
Like what? X-rays.
Plain x-rays usually don't show the cyst itself since it's soft tissue, but they're helpful to rule out other bone problems like arthritis or bone tumor.
Okay. Any blood tests?
Nah, standard lab studies aren't typically needed for a suspected ganglion. You'd expect the results to be normal.
So imaging might come into play if it's not clear.
Exactly. If the clinical diagnosis is uncertain, or maybe if it's in an unusual spot, imaging can help. Ultrasound is one option.
Ultrasound.
Yeah, it can definitely visualize ganglia, but it has some limitations availability. It depends a lot on the person doing the scan and maybe gives less detail about surrounding structures like
So
bone.
what's the alternative? MRI.
MRI is often considered a better choice for a really comprehensive look.
Why is that?
It gives much better anatomical detail. This is especially important for ganglia on the palm side of the wrist, the volar side, because the anatomy there is more complex, with important nerves and arteries nearby. So knowing the exact location and relationships is crucial if surgery is being considered.
Right, surgical planning.
Yeah, and MRI is also better at differentiating a ganglion cyst from other kinds of soft tissue masses like tumors, although thankfully those are rare.
Any downsides to MR?
Well, it's more expensive, obviously. And sometimes it's too sensitive that might pick up other little things that aren't relevant, incidental lomas.
Incidentalomas, I like that. So if an MRI is done, what does a ganglion cyst typically look like on the scan?
Okay, so on MRI, ganglia usually have pretty sharp, well-defined borders. They often look like they're made up of multiple little connected sacs. It's called a multi-loculated appearance. And the wall of the cyst might light up or enhance after you inject contrast dye.
What about the signal brightness?
Typically, they show up as bright on what are called T2-weighted images. That's characteristic of fluid, and they look darker or duller on T1-weighted images.
Okay.
And after contrast, as mentioned in Figure 3 in the chapter, you often see this diffuse enhancement within the lesion, especially with fat suppression techniques. Again, the chapter gets into the specifics of T1, T2, and contrast.
Good to know. Now, who actually gets these? You mentioned common, but is there a typical person?
It's interesting. The true incidence, like how many people get them per year, isn't really known. But one fascinating finding from MRI studies on volunteers without symptoms was that about half of them actually had risk ganglia they didn't know about.
Half.
Yeah. But in terms of who presents clinically seeking treatment, they are about 3 times more common in females than males.
3 times. Any idea why?
The chapter doesn't really speculate on why, but that's the observation.
An eight.
They can happen at any age. Really, kids get them, older adults get them. But the peak incidence, the most common time to see them, is in the 2nd to 4th decades of life. So roughly 20s to 40s.
Okay. And when a doctor sees a lump and they think it might be a ganglion, what else are they considering? What's on the differential diagnosis list?
Right. If it looks really typical, classic location, feels right, it's highly likely to be a ganglion.
But if it's atypical.
Yeah, if it's in an unusual spot or feels odd or have other concerning features, then you need to think broader. Further imaging, maybe referring to a hand specialist, becomes more important.
And what could those other things be?
Well, it could be a true synovial cyst, which does have that synovial lining, or maybe inflammation of the tendons, like extensor tenosynovitis. Very rarely you have to consider things like synovial sarcoma or other uncommon tumors like extraskeletal chondrosarcoma, maybe even a venous aneurysm.
Okay, so mostly benign, but you keep other things in the back of your mind.
Exactly. And that differential list also applies to those specific types, the retinacular and mucoid cysts too. Things like xanthomas need to be considered there as well.
Right. Let's shift to treatment then. What are the options if someone has a ganglion cyst? starting with non-surgical approaches.
Well, a really important point is that many of these, maybe even most, will actually resolve spontaneously. They just go away on their own over time.
So doing nothing is a valid option.
Absolutely. Often the best treatment is no treatment, just observation and reassurance. Patients should also know they can wax and wane, get bigger and smaller, and that this isn't necessarily worrisome.
Okay, reassurance. What else? Splints.
Splints or braces can be reasonable, yeah. Especially if there's a suspicion that, you know, repetitive motion might be contributing, or simply if the patient feels better doing something proactive.
And those retinacular cysts, do they go away?
They seem to have a particularly good chance of resolving on their own. One estimate mentioned in the source is over 50%. And in kids under 10, it's reportedly even higher, maybe close to 100%.
Wow.
However, if they do persist in adults, they are often symptomatic, causing that pain with gripping we talked about.
Okay. Now I have to ask about the historical method, hitting it with a heavy book. The Bible bump.
Ah, yes. That definitely used to be a thing. People would literally try to smash the cyst with a heavy book, often a Bible, hence the name.
Did it work?
Well, it might rupture the cyst temporarily, making the lump disappear.
Yeah.
But it's really not recommended.
Why not?
Big risk of injuring yourself. You could damage surrounding tendons, nerves, even bone. Plus, the recurrence rate is super high because you haven't dealt with the underlying stock or the source of the fluid.
Right. The connection is still there. Okay, so no book smashing. What about draining it with a needle? Aspiration.
Aspiration is a reasonable option. It involves sticking a needle into the cyst and drawing out the thick gelatinous fluid.
Does that work better?
It can definitely shrink the cyst and relieve symptoms, at least temporarily. But the recurrence rate after aspiration is still quite high. The reported range in studies varies a lot, anywhere from maybe just 1% up to 50% or even higher, depending on the study and technique.
So it often comes back.
It often does, yes. Also, a specific warning. Aspiration of ganglia on the palm side of the wrist, the volar ones, is generally not recommended.
Why is that?
Because of the proximity to the radial artery. It's just too risky to be poking around there with a needle blindly.
Good point. Okay, so if observation, splinting, and aspiration don't work or aren't suitable, what's next? Surgery.
Surgery becomes an option, yes. The main reasons to consider more aggressive treatment like surgery would be persistent pain. If the cyst is interfering significantly with daily activities or work, if there's evidence of nerve compression.
Like the tingling or weakness.
Exactly. Or if there's a risk of the skin over the cyst breaking down, which can happen particularly with those thin skin mucus cysts near the fingernail. Also, if aspiration has been tried and failed and the cyst is still bothersome, surgery might be discussed.
And what does the surgery actually involve?
The goal is to remove the entire cyst sac and, crucially, the stalk or pedicle that connects it back to the joint capsule or the tendon sheath. Sometimes a small portion of that capsule or sheath around the stalk's origin is removed too.
Does it work?
Generally, yes. Surgical excision is usually successful, provided that stalk is completely removed. If the stalk is left behind, recurrence is much more likely.
How does it compare long-term to, say, just waiting or aspiration?
There was an interesting comparison study mentioned. It found that symptom resolution, things like pain, weakness, stiffness, was actually pretty similar between groups who got just reassurance, aspiration, or surgery.
Really? Similar outcomes?
In terms of symptoms, yes. However, the rate of the cysts persisting or coming back was much higher in the reassurance and aspiration groups, around 58%, compared to only 39% in the surgery group.
So surgery is better at preventing recurrence.
It seems so. Interestingly, though, patient satisfaction was higher in the groups that had something done aspiration or excision, up to 80%, compared to just reassurance, around 53%.
Why would that be if symptoms were similar?
The authors suggested it might be related to a kind of psychological action bias, feeling better because an active step was taken, even if the objective outcome wasn't drastically different symptom-wise in that particular study.
Huh. Interesting psychology there. What about those volar palmar wrist ganglia?
Another study specifically on those found no significant difference in symptoms, regardless of whether they were treated with excision, aspiration, or just observation.
So maybe less benefit from surgery there?
Potentially, at least according to that study. It highlights that the decision really needs to be individualized.
Okay. Let's circle back to those mucus cysts specifically. Is the treatment different for them, given the arthritis link?
Yes, definitely. Because they're so often associated with underlying osteophytes, just removing the cyst sac itself isn't usually enough.
Why not?
The recurrence risk is very high if you don't also address the bone spur, the osteophyte.
So surgery involves removing the spur too.
Correct. The most successful approach for mucocysts typically involves excising the cyst and debriding or excising the DIP joint osteophyte. Studies show very low recurrence rates, like 0% to 3%, with this combined approach.
Does it help the nail deformity too?
It often does resolve the nail ridging, yes, but not always guaranteed.
So the surgeon might just remove the osteophyte and capsule, or remove both the bone spur and the cyst?
Exactly. Different techniques exist, but the key seems to be dealing with that osteophyte and often a bit of the joint capsule, capsulectomy. Just taking the cyst out without touching the bone or capsule leads to high recurrence.
Any risks with removing the bone spur?
There is a potential complication of causing some instability in that small finger joint, the DIP joint.
Okay. What if the main problem isn't the cyst itself, but the pain from the underlying arthritis?
That's a great point. In those cases, fusing the joint and IP joint arthrodesis can be a really good option. It definitively treats the arthritis pain and also prevents the cyst from recurring.
So fusion is an option.
Yes. And it's important to counsel patients that even if you remove the mucus cyst and the osteophyte, if their primary pain is really coming from the underlying arthritis itself, the surgery might not completely eliminate their pain.
Makes sense. You fix the cyst, but maybe not the root cause of the joint pain.
Precisely.
Okay, this has been really informative. Let's maybe recap with our five terms to crystallize the main takeaways from the chapter.
Sounds good. First, ganglion cyst. That's the benign, fluid-filled mass, usually near joints or tendon sheaths. Most common spot. Dorsal wrist.
Got it. Number two.
Mucus cyst. Remember, this is a specific type of ganglion cyst found at the dorsal IP joints of the fingers, often linked with arthritis and those bone spurs osteophytes.
Okay, third.
Retinacular cyst. This is a ganglion cyst arising from the flexor tendon sheath on the palm side. It can be painful when you grip things.
Right. Fourth term.
Aspiration. That's draining the fluid with a needle. It can work temporarily, but recurrence is pretty common, and it's generally not advised for those volar palm side wrist ganglia due to artery risk.
But number five.
Cyst excision. That's the surgical removal. Generally has the best success rate long term, especially if the stalk is fully removed. Hmm. And for mucus cysts, it usually needs to include removal of the osteophyte as well.
Excellent summary. And just to remind everyone listening,
we have just discussed a chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook of musculoskeletal medicine, Orthopedia.
Orthopedia by Bernstein, Pinney, and Vayet. It is available at www.orthopedia.com at no charge.
And we'll say it again, before you take a test and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us, read the book.
You'll be glad you did. And maybe a final thought to leave you with, considering that study finding ganglia in almost half of asymptomatic volunteers, what does that really tell us about the boundary between just a normal anatomical variation and an actual medical condition that needs attention? Something to think about.